Welcome to the Crude Life Podcast. My name is Jason Spies. This is a very special feature on Hurricane Harvey and the impact it is having on other shale plays across the United States. Hurricane Harvey is considered the worst natural disaster in history by many, but what it may have caused in damages, it has not broken their spirit. In the aftermath of the storm, individuals, companies, and organizations are banding together to help those who have been affected, and among them is the oil and gas industry. Several companies have already made more than $3.5 million available to assist the American Red Cross, the United Way, and other organizations in providing relief efforts. Others are expanding or opening up existing programs to provide higher matching contributions from employees and coordinating employee volunteer groups to help, especially since the water has receded and cleanup has begun. The Texas Oil and Gas Association has been working with member companies and other oil and gas associations across the country looking for ways to help. The Texas Oil and Gas Association is recommending considering one of the following organizations for those wishing to help with the relief efforts: the Red Cross, Salvation Army, Greater Houston Community Foundation Hurricane Harvey Relief Fund, the Houston Food Bank, and the Austin Disaster Relief Network. Now, all of those links are available at our website, thecrudelife.com. That's thecrudelife.com. And once again, those are the organizations that the Texas Oil and Gas Association is asking those people looking to help, if they want to do it directly, to go to those websites and donate to the Red Cross, Salvation Army, Greater Houston Community Foundation Hurricane Harvey Relief Fund, the Houston Food Bank, and the Austin Disaster Relief Network. Again, all of those links are available at our website, thecrudelife.com. That's thecrudelife.com. And now back to our special feature on the Hurricane Harvey impact with our exclusive interview with Jeff Simon, director for the Western Dakota Energy Association, on how Hurricane Harvey will impact the Bakken.
Jeff Simon, I am executive director of the Western Dakota Energy Association.
Well, let's start off by, first of all, give you a quick plug of your organization, what it is that you guys are doing out in the Bakken oil field and out in western North Dakota, and then also just kind of an update from the energy sector, if you will, from the meetings and the travels you've had.
Well, the Western Dakota Energy Association represents units of local government in the oil-producing region and the coal counties as well. So we look out for the interests of cities, counties, and school districts impacted by energy development. That's really the primary mission of the organization, through both advocacy, lobbying, legislation, that sort of thing, as well as education. We try to keep our members informed through a weekly newsletter. As for the industry itself, I think most folks are aware of the activity is happening, but it is now concentrated pretty much in the core counties. By that, I'm talking about the main four there: McKenzie, Montrail, Williams, and Dunn. All the drilling activity, or nearly all of it, is concentrated in that area. But the impacts being felt are very real out there right now. We've got, you know, somewhere between 50 and 60 rigs working, depending upon the day. It ebbs and flows a little bit, but that represents a lot of truck activity and you know, just general impacts in those communities. And we need to look out for them and make sure that they're able to support the industry.
And I was going to ask that, too, as well, and we're going to get into your annual meeting in just a moment here, but given the fact that you do run into quite a few people as well as travel from different areas, I believe you're located in Bismarck, so, I mean, you get out in the field and other things, but you're also, like I say, in touch with everybody else. There was a pretty good hiring blitz over the last 3-4 months. Is that starting to come to fruition a little bit? Are they still hiring? Are the guys in the field now? Do you know any of that information from your day-to-day conversations?
You know, from what I hear, Jason, there is a lot of hiring demand out there, and frankly, there aren't enough workers to fill the jobs. You know, from what I've been told, there are wells that are not completed because they can't hire enough folks for the frac crews to finish the well. So yeah, there's you know, definitely workforce needs out there. You know, the previous time around when the Bakken really took off, you know, 2009 and 10, and that part of the, you know, that time frame, we had a nationwide recession going on at that time, so people were looking for work, and that's really no longer the case. So it's much tougher now to find workers.
I would agree with that. I would even go a step further, you know, without trying to, you know, bring up what's going on down in the southern part of the United States with the hurricane happening, Harvey. But that is going to have an impact on the Bakken on several different fronts, from the refineries closing down, the ripple that has, to the workers that are going to be rebuilding down there after it sounds like the water's starting to recede a little bit, so they're starting to get more of a handle on things. You know, without getting insensitive and in too much into speculation, has that kind of crossed your mind a little bit that the Bakken may be impacted by some of the things happening down in Texas?
Most definitely. You know, Texas, they're kind of the gorilla in the room in terms of oil production in the lower 48 here. And in fact, my lead article in our Friday newsletter, we send one out every Friday, was about the potential impact of Harvey on the petroleum industry, both refining and the crude production. Curiously, you know, initially what we've seen is gasoline prices and gasoline futures have gone up, but crude prices have gone down. And I was puzzling over that, why that would be the case. But basically, demand is down at the refineries, so the price of crude went down. But demand for the product that the refineries produce is going to be high now because we've got some of them offline, so gasoline prices went up. It's really kind of a paradox. And I suspect, I don't know, I don't profess to be an oil industry or oil market expert, but I presume that'll change here in a week or two, depending upon how quickly those refineries come back online.
Yeah, I would imagine every day that they're shut down has, I don't know if it has a week impact, a month impact, or, you know, every day is a day. I'm not sure. I'm like you. I'm not quite an expert on those timelines and projections and that sort of thing. But I would guess that every day would be another. I mean, it would take a while to rebound is what I'm getting at. Would you speculate in that direction or anything along those lines?
Well, yeah, I don't know much about refinery operation, but I know a restart takes a while and they're completely shut down. The other factor in here, too, is the reach of the rain event. I'm not sure it was impacted by the wind, but the rain impacted a portion of the Eagle Ford. And so a lot of the wells there were offline. And, of course, a lot of the platforms in the Gulf were also shut down during the storm, which, by the way, is still there. It's still happening.
Well, let's transition. Of course, our prayers and our thoughts go out to everybody down there. And anything that, you know, that I imagine the oil industry is going to be stepping up and putting together a few different programs, that sort of thing. Of course, keep listening. We'll keep everybody posted on that because a lot of this stuff is so dynamic right now. And as we kind of roll this out here, but let's talk about what you have coming up here at the annual meeting. First of all, let's get some of the dates and some of the information and, you know, who you guys are expecting, that sort of thing. And then we'll kind of get into maybe a specific or two about what some of the topics are going to be about. So just kind of what's the overview to get people, in case they got a pen and paper, they want to write it down for the annual meeting coming up. Is it September or October?
It's actually November 1 and 2, November 1st and 2nd, and it will be at the Grand Dakota, or the Ramada Grand Dakota Lodge in Dickinson, which is just north of the interstate exit there, November 1st and 2nd. We're going to start out this year with a social. Typically, we've had a one-day meeting. We're going to have a little social get-together and perhaps a trade show if that comes together. The opening evening, 5:30, is when we're going to start the first evening, and then we'll have a full day's agenda the next day.
And what kind of speakers are you anticipating this year, and or topics are you going to be discussing?
Well, during the opening social, we expect Lieutenant Governor Brent Sanford, you know, the former mayor of Watford City, will be kind of giving a few remarks from the governor's office, speaking on behalf of Governor Burgum. And we'll also have Cal Coolin talking about Highway 85 and the Theodore Roosevelt Expressway that evening. It's kind of a lighthearted program, not anything too heavy. And then the following day, we're kind of heavy into technology and I'll say, you know, the issues of the day in terms of the legislature. We've got a panel discussion on refracs and secondary oil recovery, you know, optimizing oil recovery. That's really kind of what the Bakken is all about. We heard the governor talk about that. In order to compete, you know, out here in the Bakken, we're transportation impaired. We're far from the market and far from the refineries. So through innovation, the producers in the Bakken have come up with better recovery techniques, figuring out how to do it better, cheaper, faster, you know. So that's a lot of what we're going to talk about initially. That's first off the program. And then we also have a presentation from Dr. Mike Holmes, who represents the Lignite Research Council, kind of filling us in on the latest in coal research. There are some very promising technology possibilities out there in terms of carbon dioxide reuse. Not just capture, but figuring out ways to reuse it. There's a project looking for rare earth elements in coal, which, you know, they're in every bit of electronics we've got these days. So that's a real promising possibility. And then we're going to talk about legislative issues, too. Senator Wardner will kind of give an overview of the interim. We've got a hub city study underway again, looking at the proper level of funding for the oil-impacted communities, as well as an education funding panel. We've got the chairman of the Education Funding Committee, a member of it, Senator David Rust from Tioga, and then one of the superintendents impacted by that, Leslie Bieber from Alexander, will be on that panel as well, which will be, by the way, moderated by one of our board members, Dr. Steve Holen, who's the superintendent in Watford City. And then, oh my gosh, I'm not even to the noon hour yet. We've got two keynotes over the noon hour. Mark Fox from MHA Nation has agreed to join us and will deliver a keynote, as well as Dr. Thomas Mitzel from Dickinson State University is going to give us an overview of things that are going on at DSU and how it fits into the, basically how it's providing a workforce for the energy industry, I think, is where we'll see his conversation directed. And in the afternoon, we're going to provide everyone an update on load pass permits. That's the truck permit system operated by our association, managing overweight, over-length vehicles in the oil-producing counties. And then, traditionally, the meeting will conclude with remarks from Lynn Helms, the Department of Mineral Resources, kind of giving his overview of oil production and maybe, kind of a market outlook as well. Well, a full day, for sure.
Yeah, it sounds like you guys got a pretty jammed pack couple of days. I wanted to mention two things just off of the list of the itinerary and speakers that you had. There was the first one, and we can touch on that second, which is Lieutenant Governor Brent Sanford, former mayor of Watford City, and his role in the UAS industry and kind of integrating the drones and the UAS into the oil and gas world. But before we get into that, I wanted to ask you about coal. I'm really glad you guys are going to do a part on coal because, you know, coal really gets a bad rap when you think about it. I mean, they power 80-90% of North Dakota, and the technologies that have happened over the last decade are monumental in the coal industry. And it almost seems like so many people have just written off coal. Like, I don't want to get political, but like the Obama administration, for example, I felt like they just wrote off coal. And I felt like Hillary tried to as well. And it's to me, that was kind of overlooking the advancements that we've made in technology when you're talking about clean coal. Am I out of line for saying that, or do you know kind of what I'm talking about?
Absolutely. I think you're right on target. I mean, there indeed was a war on coal, a regulatory war on coal. They were doing everything they could to eliminate it as a resource. The perception was that it was dirty, it was yesterday's fuel, but to your point there, you're absolutely right. Coal has kind of gone through a little bit of a revolution, almost analogous to what's happened in the Bakken. New technology has come up with better recovery techniques for oil producers. And in terms of the coal industry, they're looking at new generation technologies. And we're not talking, just the traditional steam-fired, coal-fired steam generation plant. We're talking about maybe a revolutionary technology, totally new form in terms of the alum cycle. And I know Dr. Holmes will give us an update on that. But the reuse potential for carbon dioxide is very real, too. They're looking at all sorts of different technologies. And, the thing is, coal is such an abundant resource. It's cheap. It's readily available. And, in terms of global competitiveness, everybody likes to have this idea that the United States is going to have the cleanest energy, and they're fans of renewables. But coal is, as they say, increasingly clean. It's abundant. It's affordable. And if we're going to remain competitive, we ought to be looking not just for clean energy or green energy or politically correct energy, but the cheapest form of energy possible as well in order to compete.
And I'll tell you, this is where I think people who may not quite understand what role Governor Doug Burgum can play in this, because he's starting the conversation about capturing that carbon and injecting it into greenhouses, growing blueberries is usually the example he gives, like over in Iceland. And he might not be specifically talking about that process and that steps, but he's talking about thinking outside the box by grabbing that carbon. And plants, for example, eat carbon. So if we can figure out a way to do that, we're going to help the coal industry, we're going to help the planet get greener, and we're going to help the ag industry. That to me is where I think Governor Burgum can really help out the energy industry, and also bring in some other industries that kind of aid it. Are you seeing that at the state level in any way at all, that he's starting to, I guess, integrate some of these different industries together to prop them up?
Oh, precisely. That, what you described there, the greenhouse, that is one of the projects that's been funded by the Lignite Research Council, which is supported by taxes on the industry, the coal industry, by the way. You think about a coal plant, you build a gigantic greenhouse next to it. We've got, the fertile soil types that we need, but, you build a many-acre-sized greenhouse. You've got waste heat coming off the coal plant to heat it. You've got carbon dioxide to feed the plants, and you've got rail capacity to move the products to market. I mean, it's a real promising, type of project. There is one, during the presentation to the Research Council, they described a similar type of greenhouse next to a coal plant operation, I believe in Idaho. And then we're looking at something similar to that in North Dakota. It's a tremendous opportunity.
I personally think it's exciting times. And we'll kind of wrap up here a little bit. Jeff Simon with the North Dakota Energy Association. Is that correct?
Well, it's the Western Dakota Energy Association, but you're pretty close.
I apologize. I know you guys changed your name, and it was about 2 years ago now. Would change your name maybe about a year ago.
It was the last year's annual meeting, and it really is just to reflect the fact that we were the North Dakota Association of Oil and Gas Producing Counties. But as I described at the outset of the interview, we cover more than just the oil counties. We also represent the coal industry. Increasingly, we're seeing wind energy development, and we don't represent just counties. Our members include the cities and school districts in the energy impacted region.
That's a good example, our coal talk, and really, quite honestly, and for the listeners out there, we didn't prepare for this. We just shot times back and forth over email. It worked out, and so this is all fresh interview, and your knowledge on the coal industry certainly shows how you guys are outside of oil and gas, so kudos to that. And I wanted to conclude a little bit, and we'll let you recap the annual meeting again, but Brent Sanford, Lieutenant Governor, former Watford City Mayor, wealth of knowledge, obviously, when it comes to the Bakken, because osmosis, he lived it every single day. Now he's on the UAS kind of committee and the drones, and him and I talked quite a bit about this. Are you at all briefed or have any insight when it comes to the integration with the UAS industry into the oil and gas sector in terms of either security or economic savings?
I guess I characterize myself as kind of a casual observer, but I do know that it really represents some very promising prospects. And it's interesting, right? At UND, they're right on top of it there into research of potential uses. And, I think the, I'd say almost the regulatory side of it, when you get some objects flying through the air, you're going to have to deal with the Federal Aviation Administration, make sure everything is safe. But there are, just immense amounts of possibilities for further automation, because every oil well out there, I mean, sometimes they're inaccessible in the winter months or very nearly so. But if you've got a drone, you can fly it over the thing to kind of check out things. There's just all kinds of different possibilities. You just kind of, the old cliche, think outside the box. There's all kinds of applications for drones.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to leak detection and some of those other things that are just going to be really incredible for not only the efficiency, the cost-saving part, but of course, then you get the environmental impact too, and it's just more examples of how the energy sector is really a leader when it comes to environmental technology, and I've seen that firsthand. So there ain't anybody arguing with me on that. I can tell you that right now. But talk to me about this annual meeting. Let's recap it one more time. It's coming up November 1st and 2nd. Is that right?
November 1st and 2nd at the Ramada Grand Dakota Lodge in Dickinson. We'll start with an opening social 5:30 the evening of the 1st. That's a Wednesday evening, and then get underway at 8:30 on Thursday, November 2nd. And, you know, the agenda is kind of heavy on technology, both oil and coal technology, the latest recovery techniques, and some of the promising research into coal and beneficial uses beyond just electric generation. And a couple speakers I didn't mention at the outset, Commissioner Julie Fedorchak from the Public Service Commission will give us an update on PSC activity. A lot of things going on with the pipeline sector, obviously, there. And we'll have some folks from North Dakota Department of Transportation and the local technical assistance program kind of talking about road assessments and road needs and different ways we've figured out how to extend the life of roads that are, pummeled by heavy truck traffic all the time. So, we're going to talk legislation. We're going to talk school funding. We'll talk about our truck permit system and then, again, wrap up with Lynn Helms and a look at production activity in North Dakota.
And of course, the easiest way probably to get that is just sign up for the newsletter. I get the newsletter. I love it. It comes once a week, and it's got about 10, maybe a dozen stories. And, you know, some of them I click on. Some of them I just kind of read that introductory paragraph. It's one of my favorite newsletters because it's actually structured in a way I like it. And I think a lot of people out there would like it too, because you give enough information, and then if they want more, they can go get more. Plus, you know, that's, I think, maybe where I knew about the annual meeting. So where can people sign up for your newsletter?
They can do so right on our website. If you go to ndenergy.org, as in North Dakota Energy, ndenergy.org, there's a link to the newsletter on there. Just click on the news section. It'll take you to the newsletter. And there's always, once you find the, you know, we maintain an archive of the newsletters online, I think. They're from the current time up back till December of last year. So you can kind of catch up on 8 or 9 months worth of energy news. Just click on the newsletter. There's a subscribe option in there, and you can do it, or you can just check out our website every week, because it's there every week as well.
To listen to the full-length interview with Jeff Simon, Director for the Western Dakota Energy Association, or to listen to other Hurricane Harvey impact features, visit our website, thecrudelife.com. That's thecrudelife.com. And I do want to mention once again, if you are looking to help out in any relief fund, the Texas Oil and Gas Association has been working with member companies and other oil and gas associations looking for ways to help. The Texas Oil and Gas Association recommends considering one of the following organizations for those wishing to help with the relief effort: the Red Cross, Salvation Army, Greater Houston Community Foundation Hurricane Harvey Relief Fund, Houston Food Bank, Austin Disaster Relief Network. That's the Red Cross, the Salvation Army, Greater Houston Community Foundation Hurricane Harvey Relief Fund, the Houston Food Bank, and the Austin Disaster Relief Network. All those organizations and links are available at our website, thecrudelife.com. That's thecrudelife.com. And that's going to do it for this special feature on the impact of Hurricane Harvey. Till next time, my name is Jason Spies, asking you to be happy. And remember, sometimes life can just be crude.